Welcome to Viralcast, MovieViral.com's official podcast. I'm Dan, the executive editor for the site. I'm here today with Caleb, one of our contributing writers, and Cody, who has been with us before as a guest. How's it going, guys?
Going well.
Good. Mm-hmm.
So this week we're going to be doing another kind of general news podcast. There's been some pretty cool stuff that's happened recently. We want to cover all that. The first one I kind of want to talk about was one of the most recent ones that we actually just posted yesterday, I believe. And it was Indiana Jones. Interesting viral. So they got sent... The University of Chicago got sent a package for Dr. Henry Jones Jr., who's Indiana Jones. And no one knows where it came from. It just looks really cool, and you guys can check it on our site. It has a bunch of stuff inside of it, like pictures of... what's her name? The love interest from the Indiana Jones, first Indiana Jones movie.
Ravenwood?
Yeah, there you go. And a journal, things like that. Some really interesting things, but no one really can tell where it's coming from. Have you guys looked this? What do you guys think about this? It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I was reading about it yesterday. It's just kind of really weird. a bunch of random, like, old dollar bills and pictures of, you know, his girlfriend. Well, yeah, his girlfriend. I don't know what this could be for. It's really strange. There are no real stamps on it, is from what I'm hearing. So I don't know how they were able to. I guess somebody just dropped it off.
Probably. Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe there's maybe it's for the fifth Indiana Jones. Like they're working in secret on it.
That's a super early a viral for that. It's like they haven't even started really working on it. I don't know. What do you think, Cody?
I don't know. I'm with Caleb on this one. Yeah, it's so totally random. It's pretty cool, though. I mean, it's kind of like a little DIY viral thing going on there, probably. And I don't know. It's cool.
Yeah, it could be somewhere where someone's just taking the time to say, hey, this would be kind of cool to try out, see what people think.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw one of the first comments on the Badass Digest article, and they covered it, was that it looks like the work of a madman. And it says his next trick, he's going to steal the Declaration of Independence.
Oh, wow.
Turns
out it was Nicolas Cage the whole time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, it's really cool. I mean, it's just strange. I love that kind of stuff, especially for something that is, you know, kind of classic, and then really treating classic. They have like these, the stamps they have on there are these kind of classic stamps, and you know a lot of things are of the time. Like they're, I don't know, it's interesting.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, sort of that the fan made viral kind of thing. Go ahead.
Oh no, I was just saying pretty.
So this week we had some really cool news. We'll kind of go into our buzz section. I wanted to get that one last viral thing out of the way, but for the buzz, kind of a lot of similar stories, but updated. One of the big things people have been talking about still is Man of Steel and Justice League. We got our first full trailer for Man of Steel, which I thought was really awesome, but of course that also, we still got more rumors flying around. And so once again there's that rumor going around that Joseph Gordon-Levitt, first, we have to assume that he's going to, you know, be Batman. But there was rumors that he might actually have a cameo as Batman in Man of Steel. And then they asked Christopher Nolan about it, and he pretty much says he can't talk about that. Which people, of course, take that out to say, oh, that means maybe it is, because he would just say no if it wasn't going to happen. what do you guys think about that idea? Do you think that, is there anything to it, or are people just, you know, really just wanting something weird to happen? They just can't let go of it. I don't know, what do you guys think? Oh, Caleb first.
Okay. Yeah, I think they just can't let it go. I'm like, people, get over it. Please. I'm just so sick of hearing this stuff every week. It's the same thing. Like, Joseph Gordon-Levitt this and Joseph Gordon-Levitt that. Like, please. I don't even have any comment. Like, it's just, it's so silly. Like, it's just people fishing for something. Mm-hmm. They're just fishing for hits, I think. You know, whoever is reporting this stuff. I mean, not saying that we're fishing for hits, but,
yep,
you know.
We are. I'm not ashamed of it.
Okay, so yeah, all right, so we're fishing for hits. Let's just stop. You know, I don't like feeding into rumors. I mean, I know they're fun, you know, it's fun to speculate about things, but at a certain point it just gets to be too much. I mean, it's every week we have something, you know, new, quote-unquote new, about Joseph Gordon-Levitt and his relationship with, you know, the Batman character in Justice League.
Yeah.
It's getting old, it's getting tired. I'm frankly quite sick of it. And, you know, it'll be great if it does happen, but for right now it's just rumors and, you know, just wait. Hold your horses.
What do you think, Cody?
I'm with Caleb again on this one. People are reading into this, you know, you really don't know what Christopher Nolan, you know, what his contract says about, like, you know, non-disclosure. It could be that he's not allowed to talk about anything that is in the works or is even, like, being discussed or anything at all. He's probably just not allowed to talk about anything that has to do with Man of Steel, even if it's not actually going to happen. I just feel like people are just reading into things and creating these stories and I don't know. I don't know. They need to sit down and take a deep breath and wait for some real news to come out.
But this is the internet. You can't expect that.
I know. I know. I'm from the wrong decade. I'm in the wrong decade right now.
Yeah. I mean, we did get some official, well, not official Justice League news, but we got some news from Latino Review,
right,
about the where they would be taking, you know, the plot from.
Oh, really?
They said it was going to be from, what was the name of the books, Dan?
I forget. I didn't even cover it, because it was, to me, it just seemed like, again, how, you know, is it real, is it not real? And it wasn't as interesting to me, because it was just taken from some books. I know it was something a little bit more extreme, like the storyline that they were looking at.
Well, yeah, it was like blending the Justice League and the Justice Society together.
Yeah, it was a pretty extreme storyline. I remember, I'm trying to find their thing to talk about.
Was it the one about Earth 2? I think some people that I was talking to the other day were talking about something about Earth 2 being in it or something.
Oh, yeah, there's something where they're trying to say, like, where you could have different dimensions, like the different superheroes are from different planets, and so they're all coming together to fight somebody. I was like, holy crap, that'd be crazy.
I mean, that's just the Avengers. That's,
well,
Avengers,
yeah,
2.
Well, no, I mean, like, different, like, universes, like, you know, like, parallel universes and stuff.
Oh.
Like, that's what they're saying.
That's the one thing I don't really like about DC Comics is their multiverse. It's like,
yeah,
it's too complicated. It's too complicated.
Yeah,
yeah, that always frustrated me. we'll talk about the trailer a little bit later when we cover trailers in general, but at least we had something real from Man of Steel this week. So Star Trek Into Darkness, another thing that we got some trailer stuff for. If you actually went to see the IMAX versions of The Hobbit this week, there was a still that came out that had Benedict Cumberbatch and Kirk and Spock. And so the photo actually labels Benedict Cumberbatch as John Harrison, which is a character who is not in any known canon for Star Trek. So kind of a strange thing, because a lot of people expected him to be a known villain, someone like Khan or Gary Mitchell. So the question is, who is John Harrison? Is it maybe just a fake name, like a red herring, as they call it? Something to throw us off? You know, we know J.J. Abrams, how he likes to be all secretive. So I kind of want to get your guys' opinion on what you think is up with this character, John Harrison. I'll start with Cody.
I still think it's Gary Mitchell. That they released that image this week of Kirk and Spock and character X. I don't want to call him John Hamilton John Harrison, because I think that might not be really his name, like you were saying. But he's standing in that like kind of chamber with like an invisible wall between them, like a field, force field. And that is something that actually happens in that episode with Gary Mitchell, where Gary Mitchell is trapped in behind a force field, and his power becomes so great that eventually he's able to break through the force field and escape. And that happens in that original episode of Star Trek.
Right.
So, I don't know, it's just like so like that. Also, I was just for the hell of it, like, I googled John Harrison, just the name, and there was... You know how J.J. Abrams is, like, a big fan of, like, Romero films and stuff? Like, if you see Super 8, like, it's not only a Spielberg homage, but there's some homage to Romero and, like,
yeah,
Dawn of the Dead and stuff in there.
Uh-huh.
John Harrison was is a writer, director, producer that worked on a bunch of Romero's things as like his first assistant director or something. And he went on to, let's see. He was in Knight Riders. He was in Creepshow and Day of the Dead. Hmm. He composed the music for some of those.
Huh.
He played the screwdriver zombie in Romero's classic Dawn of the Dead. My point is, sorry to go on about this, but like, I think that it's just a code name, and they picked some name of somebody that's like slightly more obscure from their childhood fandom or something, maybe, and use it as a code name. I think it's either they change his name and he's still basically Gary Mitchell, or he's Gary Mitchell and they're just covering it up. I haven't seen the 9 minutes yet. I wanted to say this really fast also, was that I thought that it was really poorly handled the way that they announced the theaters that had the 9 minute preview, because they announced that there was going to be the 9 minute preview at IMAX theaters, and everybody kind of like jumped on it. They're like, oh, we got to get our tickets before they sell out for the first weekend so we can see the 9 minutes. And they didn't say that it wasn't only going to be at the digital IMAX theaters. So the IMAX theaters that project in film, they didn't have them. And, you know, I and a bunch of my friends weren't able to see the 9 minute preview. I'm just kind of bummed about that.
That was kind of messy.
I agree
with that. I actually had the same issue where I bought the tickets because I was like, well, they say it's IMAX, so I went to my local like big IMAX, the one that shows the film. And so I bought those tickets, and then like a couple days later, you know, they announced the actual theaters. I was like, crap. So I actually got a refund. I had to go down to the theater, get a refund for the ticket, and then I chose one that actually was showing the real thing. So that kind of pissed me off too. So I definitely agree. I heard it was because like they couldn't fit it on
It's something about the film, yeah.
Yeah, it was too big, so they couldn't fit it on. So, but still, I'm like, you're right. They should have announced it at the same time. Because that was just kind of silly, especially because you want to go to the real IMAX, you know, if you can. You and me know that, you know, we're in an area where there's plenty of IMAX choices for us. Oh. We're fortunate about that to have that.
Yeah, so in Los Angeles, just in case any of the listeners don't know, there are a lot of IMAX theaters, but there are only two that are real IMAX. Real IMAX meaning that it's projected with film and not projected digitally,
right?
And they only show them at the digital one. So
yeah, so there's actually three if you consider Irvine, because you have,
oh, Irvine, okay,
yeah, that's where I went, because I'm more in Orange County. You have two in LA area, and then you have one in Orange County, and then you have a bunch of the, what some people call it, the LIMAX, which is really the digital IMAX. So they have those all over the place, and actually the one in Downtown Disney is a bigger screen, but it's still digital, but it's a bigger screen, so it's kind of almost like an IMAX, a real IMAX, which is kind of nice. That's what I ended up going to. And, so it's pretty, I don't know, that was just pretty crazy.
Yeah, it was messy. I thought that, I think Friday, they released another list of theaters, and I was like, because I was looking at it, and I said, oh, crap, my theater's not on here anymore. So I went to the Star Trek website, and just to make sure that my theater was still on, because I had bought these tickets, like, last weekend I bought them.
Mine the day or the night after they announced the original list, or not the original list, the original announcement about the 9 minute preview.
This is crazy.
Right.
Caleb, talk about the villain.
The villain.
John, is it John Harrison or?
I don't want to think it's John Harrison. Like, where did he come from? But you know, so what if it is? I mean, you don't want to see the same thing over and over again, do you?
Right.
I mean, even though it's not the same thing, it's, you know, it's a different timeline, but it's still, you know, have a little bit of originality. I mean, people are always saying, you know, nothing in Hollywood or nothing, you know, there's nothing out there today that's, you know, original. So it'd be nice if it is, but it'll also be nice if it was, you know, one of the classic Trek villains. As for the John Harrison thing, his name, I still think deep down inside that his name is Gary Mitchell.
Well, I think, I mean, let's ask the question then. If, let's say that the character is basically Gary Mitchell, but they decide to have him be called John Harrison, maybe for the entire film, they never call him Gary Mitchell. Would that be weird? Like why would you think that would, do you think they would even do that? That'd be so strange, I think.
That'd be bizarre.
It'd be bizarre, but like, what would be the point? There had to be a reason behind it. Like, right. It's his alias. Like, he's not known to other people as Gary Mitchell, but when he and Kirk go in that room and he's like sitting in that chair looking down at Kirk, he's like, oh, hey, Gary. Oh, hey, Jim. I'm going to blow up your ship now. No, Gary. No, I can't let you do that.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking too. I'm thinking if it is Gary Mitchell, this has got to be some sort of alias that he's using for most of the film, and then there's going to be some sort of reveal that's like, oh, my real name's Gary. My real name's Robin. Something like that. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
But I was also looking at like the details of the costumes and whatnot. What is Kirk wearing? Like, what are those pants? What are those boots? Those look like girl boots.
Oh, yeah. I think it's just the costume, like the way that they do it.
I hate that costume.
That's how they are. That's how they were in the first one. They're sort of emulating the original.
Well, they had Uggs in the first one, so I'm glad they changed their boots. But but now they've gone from like worst to worst.
I mean, I don't know how many.
Those little buckles, like those are girl boots. Like men don't have like buckles like that on their boots.
Have you been to the Pilgrim times?
The what times?
The Pilgrims.
I have not. I don't own a time machine.
Oh. Have you, Dan?
Actually, once it was pretty weird. but the point is, it's the future. You don't know what fashion is going to be like in 200 years.
I do.
Pink used to be a male.
Have you been to the future?
I have.
That was actually a really weird experience, but yes.
So Dan's been to the Pilgrim times. Caleb's been to the future. Where is the time travel? I've never gone.
It's very exclusive. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Only employees of Movie Viral. I don't know how often we're going to be seeing their boots in the film, so I'm not too worried about
that. We're going to be seeing them all the time because it's IMAX. So.
It's going to be close-ups of their boots. Yeah, I mean, like I said, I understand. Part of this, they're trying to emulate the original show. Not even the movies, the shows. And so they're going to have some choices where I wouldn't necessarily consider, even the uniforms, just their overall uniform, I wouldn't consider that to be an appropriate futuristic uniform. They're like these athletic shirts. Like I don't know, it's really weird.
Well, I love the shirts, I just don't like the boots. Well, how about that weird outfit that Uhura is wearing? She looks like a hipster of some sort.
With are that, you guys
that,
referring
that whole to scarf and the jacket?
Yeah, we're talking about let's kind of use this as a way to talk about the Star Trek preview. Might as well. So me and Caleb saw this preview, and like you said, Cody didn't. I'm sorry.
Sorry, Cody.
So, but first of all, I don't even remember what she was wearing. So,
the little thing that came on Apple trailers,
it's on that too. In there. Okay.
Yeah. Like everyone's wearing these weird outfits. I'm like,
it's the future.
I can't accept that.
That's the explanation for everything. That's how J.J. Abrams explains everything. It's the future. So the preview was really cool. You got to see a really great opening. It's all the opening scenes. It's a 9-minute opening. And we see, first we see a child who is sick and then looks like she's terminal. And then Mr. Cumberbatch, Mr. Harrison, comes in and is just like, I can save her. And that's it.
Yeah. Like, where did you come from, dude?
Yeah. And
what did you just say?
And he has your an English daughter.
I can save her.
He has an English accent, so some people who are worried about that. And then we cut to them. The Enterprise is on this planet, and they're trying to save it from a volcano. And it has this really cool set pieces. They're running away from the inhabitants, indigenous people, because you can't, the Prime Directive. They can't know who you are, so they're in their costume trying to run away. And it's pretty crazy. It's a cool scene. As you see in some of the trailer, you do see the Enterprise underwater, and they come out of the water.
I wanted to say that, like that's totally like I can't wrap my head around that because the Enterprise, you never see the Enterprise in the planet's atmosphere. You always see it outside it, in its orbit. Yeah, and they have it like underwater. I'm like, the Enterprise is so huge. How does it fit underwater?
Well, and actually, One of the things that I read this week was from Badass Digest, where they had a scientist explain why the Enterprise probably couldn't go underwater, because mostly it had to do with the idea that, you know, the stresses of space are different from the stresses of the ocean, and so it'd be very unlikely that an engineering crew would design a spaceship to be able to do both. It'd be very difficult. And I'm like, well, it's the future. You know, they never know. This is your flagship, you know, spacecraft. This is what you expect. So I'm like, whatever. But it did look really cool. And you're right. The only time the only time a spaceship, like a major spaceship, has ever been on a planet, from what I've seen, has been obviously Voyager. In the show Voyager, that ship was able to land. That was a big deal.
That was a big deal to show,
but it's not the Enterprise. And then the Enterprise actually did crash once in...
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
Search for Spock?
No. I don't remember.
Wasn't it Nemesis? Or was it...
I think it was Generations.
It was one of the
Next Generation crew movies.
They separated the disc from the rest of the ship, right. And Geordi LaForge, like, crashed it. Like, damn it, Geordi, he had one job.
Way to go. You can't see it, it's not his fault. So those are the only two times you've really seen, like, a major spacecraft in Star Trek ever land. So, or, you know, quote-unquote land, if you want to consider crashing landing. So it was really cool to see that, I agree. And they kind of addressed some things. Everyone's just really good. There's lots of great little, you know, the quick dialogue when they're in this big stressful situation. The interaction was really good, I thought. I thought it was a really nice preview. What do you think, Kel?
Yeah, I absolutely loved it. I just wanted it to continue.
I know. I was like, show the whole
Spock
thing.
Spock in the volcano. Like, how is he going to survive that?
They were able to leave it on a cliffhanger. It's crazy. So it was really solid.
All the dialogue from that scene, like what Scotty says to them when they come on about the spaceship being underwater, is like the salt water does something to it, and I'm like, save it, Scotty.
Well, I thought that was good. I mean, because I'd already read that whole article about that thing, and then I saw the preview, and I thought, hey, he's addressing it. So it was funny. Like, they actually know that it's like, hey, you know, I don't know what the salt water is going to do to the ship. Like, we can't be under that long.
And did they dye his hair darker?
I don't know. Again, I'd have to, like, I think it is a little darker. I'd have to watch it again to see, because it's that kind of subtle stuff I don't notice. That's your job, I guess, Mikhail. Yeah, I mean, I thought it was really cool. I thought there was supposed to be a trailer that was going to be showing in front of movies, but Cody said that they didn't show anything.
I guess it's at theater's discretion.
Yeah, it is a different theater. It is a different studio, so it doesn't have to necessarily be attached. It's parent because Star Trek Into Darkness is made by Paramount, and The Hobbit is made by Warner Brothers. So,
although Bad Robot is friends with both companies.
Yeah, well, Bad Robot works with everyone. So,
work with Disney.
I can look into that. there are some really great trailers this week that came out. We'll talk about some of the more basic ones, then we'll get to the more interesting ones. So After Earth was one that came out. It's from M. Night Shyamalan, although they were very clear about not making it a big deal. It was from M. Night Shyamalan. And it has Will Smith and his son, Jaden Smith, as a father and son. And
they're so great together.
So they're it's in the future, and they crash land on a planet. And the whole trailer is about him giving Will Smith in a weird accent. Giving a voiceover about how this planet's really dangerous, and then you find out that it's Earth. So another post-apocalyptic movie. I kind of want to talk about these together, so I'll mention Oblivion also had its trailer. That's from Joseph Kaczynski, I think how you say his last
name? Yes.
And so he's the director of Tron Legacy, and also the soon-to-be sequel to that. And so it's from him, and it has Tom Cruise, and it's also post-apocalyptic on Earth. And this time, people have live on a different planet, and he's there to like clean it up or something. I don't know,
like Wally.
I know. And then but then he finds a deeper conspiracy about what's going on, and it looks pretty cool. Since these are both, you know, post-apocalyptic movies that are set on Earth, but there's like obviously a space kind of thing, I want to know what you guys think about both of them, and maybe which one you think looks better. I'll start with Cody.
Let's see. So After Earth, I don't know. I'm just getting tired of seeing Will Smith and his son together in movies. Oh, it just feels to me like The Pursuit of Happiness After Earth.
It's a sequel.
Kind of. It's a sequel really far in the future.
Yeah, they were frozen.
Yeah, they're just like, I don't know. And then, like, Jaden Smith's costume made him look like Shark Boy from Shark Boy and Lava Girl.
Oh, nice.
And it was just like, I don't know. I'm just tired of that. And then M. Night Shyamalan, and I don't really trust him anymore. Not that I really ever did. But Oblivion, I'm slightly biased to because I'm a huge Tron Legacy fan. And I knew who Joseph Kaczynski was before the movie came out because I was following the viral campaign.
Right.
And I actually went to San Francisco for the Flynn Lives press conference during WonderCon.
Oh, right.
Before the movie came out.
Yes.
Do you guys remember that?
Yeah, definitely.
And on the way walking out with my little group I was on Unfiction at the time, and we found a group, and I made some friends that I still have. We were walking out of the event, and everybody's walking past this little group of people that were staying there talking, and it was Joseph Kaczynski, Sean Bailey, the producer of Tron Legacy, who's now like the president of production at Disney, and one of the producers, Justin Springer, and also one of the writers that also went on to go co-create Once Upon a Time. And they were all just standing there, and nobody knew it was them. So I'm like kind of biased to Joe Kaczynski. The movie is actually based on a graphic novel that Joe Kaczynski wrote before Tron Legacy came out.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
So I never read the whole graphic novel, but they did at some point release the first couple pages of it online. I did read that. I don't remember it that well because it was a couple of years ago, but I'm sure that there's a way to go digging through the internet to go find that.
Yeah.
I think they did release the graphic novel. I'm really excited for it, whether or not Tom Cruise is in it. I don't really care. It just looks really cool, and I'm really happy for Joe Kaczynski because this is only his second feature film, and before that he did the Gears of War Starry Night commercial, or am I getting that mixed up? He did a Halo commercial and a Gears of War commercial, both of which he's famous for. One is Starry Night, and one is the one that has the Mad World in it.
Yeah.
The song Mad World. He did both of those.
Yeah, he had a really good career. He had some awesome commercials. There's some other ones.
Yeah.
When Tron Legacy came out, I think Slashfilm actually had a thing where they showed some of his commercials, and they obviously look stunning. He knows. He's a really good visual director.
He comes from an architecture background. He was like I know a bunch about him because I was like really excited about Tron Legacy. Sorry. He was like an architecture professor at Columbia, and he went to Stanford. He like aerospace engineer. Like he wasn't a film person. He was an aerospace engineering and like jazz music or something like major.
That's crazy.
He did like he's like a whiz kid. Well, not kid, but you know what I mean. Very knowledgeable. A whiz adult, if that's a thing. It is now. We
he's deemed Dumbledore. It.
Movie viral copyright. Copyright 2012. Yeah. Anyway, I'll stop. But basically, I'm excited for it. I'm curious to see how it turns out.
Stop fanboying. So, Caleb, what do you think of those two movies?
After Earth. The trailer looks interesting. That's about it. Not really excited for it because M. Night Shyamalan has, you know, screwed me before. you know, those well-edited trailers, those can really trick you. Look, The Happening had a great trailer.
Did it really? Did it really, though?
I thought it was a great trailer.
Okay. Then you were really disappointed.
So, I mean, I guess I'll see it, but I'm not, you know, really looking forward to it. Oblivion, again, that looks great. Morgan Freeman's in it. Tom Cruise is in it. Who's the girl? I forget who she is.
I forget her name is.
She's in it.
so that's great. I don't know which one you mean specifically.
There's going to be like this twist where she like takes over or whatever.
Right.
So that's going to be good. I mean, both films, I guess, could be good. You won't know until they come out, though. Yeah. So
both of you seem like you both prefer Oblivion to After Earth just from the trailer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that the director of that one knows how to handle sci-fi better than the other one.
Yeah. I love Tron Legacy.
Yeah. I like it. I know some people are detractors of Tron Legacy, but I liked it a lot, too. And definitely on a visual style. And I definitely, watching both, I agree. For me, After Earth, the trailer really bothered me because I could tell that Will Smith was doing some sort of accent. Like, if you watch it, you hear his voice is just a little different. It's almost Muhammad Ali-ish, you know, like how he did it in that. And it just, I couldn't get past that. It's so
I have to watch it again.
Yeah, you just hear it in his voice a little bit, like the ahs. Like, he says that more. Like, I can't explain it. I'm not really good with, like, differentiating accents. I could just tell it was different, and that bothered me. But also, it didn't look that particularly interesting. The Oblivion one looked more interesting. And I like Tom Cruise. I know some people are tired of him and they don't like him, but I've always been, no matter how crazy he is, he's a good actor. He's a solid actor. And he's been great in a few of his last things. So, if he's in it, then I know it's probably going to be at least solid.
Oh my God, what the world?
And plus,
I just saw something weird on Tumblr.
Nice. So we'll stop looking at Tumblr. This also has Nicolaj Coster-Waldau. I can't say his name. He's in Game of Thrones.
Okay.
He plays Jaime Lannister. But he's also been in a bunch of other stuff, and I'm a fan of his, so I'll watch him in it. I didn't see him in the trailer at all, but for Oblivion, but he's apparently in it. So.
Cool.
He was in a show called New Amsterdam that was only on for like less than a season, and it was awesome, but they canceled it. which is very common. So the other two trailers are ones that had some viral attached to them, and both were from Warner Brothers. We have Man of Steel and Pacific Rim. So I'll start with Man of Steel. You guys all know that I'm a huge Superman fan, so I loved it. I thought it was a great way to both show a little bit more of, you know, how the complexity of what Superman can be, but also still kind of keep going with the whole, you know, the hope and all that good stuff that Superman's known for. So I thought it was a really solid trailer. When I actually watched it in IMAX, when I went to go see The Hobbit, I was like, I almost teared up. It was like, it looked so good on the big screen. So I want to kind of know what you guys think about Man of Steel, first of all. And then we'll kind of go into the viral part of it. Sorry, Caleb.
Oh my God, it looks so good. I was very excited. Henry Cavill, I think he looks great as Superman.
Mm-hmm. He's solid, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. You know, I've watched the trailer like 5 times on the internet, and then like just seeing it once in IMAX 3D, that was great. That was like, I don't need to see it anymore. Yeah. Yeah. It was really satisfying. Really satisfying.
What do you think, Cody?
I'm excited too. I didn't watch it quite as many times as Caleb. I watched it 1.5 times, maybe 2 times online, and then I watched it attached to The Hobbit last night. One of my friends was saying, like, it was kind of like weird how it was grounded in reality, but I'm excited for that because it's like, not to make it sound like they're doing The Dark Knight over, but it's like grittier. It's not going to be like Richard Donner, like rah rah rah, let's do Superman. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. I'm excited. The way it looks is really cool, and it's not like overly Zack Snyder, even though he's got his hands on it.
Yeah, he seems to, I mean, and I think with this one, he has a lot of pressure to make it good, you know. And
so, he also has a lot of feedback from the Nolan stuff too.
Yeah, so. And, I mean, when you have, you know, it's a big studio behind it, and there's a lot of pressure for them to make sure it's good. So I'm sure he has his marching orders, and then of course you have Christopher Nolan kind of overseeing the whole thing. So I mean, I love Zack Snyder, especially, I think he hasn't directed anything badly. He's not a very good writer, as Sucker Punch showed, but he directed that film solidly. I mean, if you just take away how terrible of a story that is and how confusing and weird it is, it looks really cool. And so, I mean, he knows how to do visual stuff. And Watchmen, I thought, was really good and kind of maybe an example of maybe where he kind of can go with this. And it's a really good chance for him to kind of really show his ability to kind of do something that's still him, but also big studio and kind of a nice compromise for him. It's so great. And there's little things in it I like so much. Like in the beginning, you know, the whole beginning part of that trailer is, you know, he's a little kid and his mom's trying to console him. It sounds like they don't specifically say it, but it seems like it's his hearing being too powerful. You know, he can hear the whole world in its spot.
I thought that's what it was.
Yeah. And they don't say it,
obviously. I didn't think about that. I just hated that part. Like, I don't like what she's saying.
But that's like, not. See, it makes sense now, though. So if you watch it again,
it makes sense.
Watch
it again.
Yeah,
like it.
Yeah, okay. He's like locked in a closet. He's like a kid, and he's like plugging his ears, I think, or something.
Yeah, his hands kind of over his ears. Yeah, his hands kind of over his ear. He says the world's too big. You know, like he's saying that he can hear the whole world. It's like, and it's bothering him. So she's like, focus on my voice. You know, it's just me and you, or an ocean, or whatever she says. But it's like, you know, this really kind of great way for her to kind of, you can imagine having these kind of abilities when you're young and how challenging it would be to kind of cope with it, you know? So I really thought that was a really good way of doing that. Except it was subtle enough where obviously some people didn't get it. But it was, I thought it was a really nice way to kind of ease you into that. And then they went like, with the cool, all the stuff, like him flying around the Earth was really cool. And obviously, a lot of people were talking about the whole him outside of the Fortress of Solitude, and, you know, he's kneeling down, you see all the stuff around him kind of move a little bit before he flies up. That was really awesome.
That was awesome.
I just want them to show the fortress.
They'll see it. There's a little bit, they didn't show everything that they showed at Comic-Con. There's a lot of similar stuff. But there's a few scenes here and there, little bits that Comic-Con showed. And it does have him in the fortress with Jor-El. And so he's talking to him for a second. So you actually see it a little bit. And you kind of see it in the trailer. I think the one part where he's saying, like, about he wants to know about himself or something, and you see his face, I think that's in the fortress. But there's...
It doesn't look like the fortress.
It's hard to tell.
It's too dark back there.
It's hard to tell. From just that little shot. But definitely in the footage that we saw at Comic-Con, you see him and Jor-El talking in the Fortress of Solitude. It is pretty dark, though, but it's definitely the Fortress of Solitude in that footage. So they'll show it. And obviously he's coming out of it, so of course they're going to show it. So I can't imagine them just like randomly having him coming out of that.
But I'm glad we got that one shot of Clark on fire.
Yeah, that was cool. They had that at Comic-Con, too, and that was awesome. And it's so cool to see that. Like, he's not even fazed by it. He's like, whatever. I thought that was hilarious. So for the viral for that, they had a website, and it was called the Deep Space Radio Wave Project, and basically what it was this kind of code. It was supposedly Kryptonian, although it's not any form of Kryptonian I've ever seen, and I've seen quite a few. And so the idea was that people had to kind of go and decipher it, and eventually that's where it led you to... Did it lead you straight to the trailer? I forget now. it led you to the countdown, and then the countdown led you to the trailer once it was up. So it was kind of a nice little thing. But what's interesting is that it's kind of very similar to how Pacific Rim has theirs. We've covered a little bit of their viral because they also had a countdown that ended up being a trailer. So it's kind of, before we start talking about Pacific Rim trailer specifically, I want to kind of know what you guys think about this whole. They had two Warner Brothers films where they do the almost the exact same kind of viral to lead up specifically to their trailer. Do you think that these are going to be part of something bigger, or is these just one-off things that Warner Brothers just said, hey, this is a good idea, let's do it for this one too? I'll kind of go ahead and start with Cody.
Okay. Well, I think it could go either way. I think for Pacific Rim, judging by what we've seen more like actual viral material,
right.
That one could expand into a greater viral. Although the same could be said for Man of Steel, and we just haven't seen it yet, and they're just like holding back on material right now.
Right.
Which is coming out first? Just a question.
They come out around the same time. I forget what day Pacific Rim comes out. Yeah, July 12th, and then Man of Steel comes out June 14th. So Man of Steel actually comes out a little bit before.
Oh, that's weird. So much for that theory. I think that just even if it were both of them, it was just this countdown. I think it's like really smart. I know like a lot of the, you know, tentpole movies, they announce the trailer release date like a month ahead of time or something.
Yeah.
And for these ones, I guess they didn't, but they started a viral countdown. Mm-hmm. Days, like a couple days before, and it builds a sort of like anticipation because you don't know if it's going to be a trailer, but you know it's going to be something. And I think it actually like adds to the anticipation when you have a timer and you don't know what it's going to lead to, and you don't know when the trailer is going to come out.
Right.
If you're excited for the film, as opposed to oh, it's coming out in a couple days. I know when what it is and when it's coming out.
Yeah, it's kind of like,
I don't know.
You have to work for it.
That's just my opinion.
Yeah, when you have to kind of work for it, that helps. You're like, oh, yeah. You know, we did this. Now we get a trailer out of it. So
Yeah, it's more rewarding too.
Yeah. What do you think, Caleb?
As of right now, I think it's just a one-off thing, like the whole countdown for the Dark Knight Rises prologue screenings that we had back in December of last year.
Right.
I don't know. They could spawn into something else, but right now, I just think they're just. Especially the Pacific Rim could be something else later on, but yeah. The Man of Steel one, I don't see that going anywhere else.
Yeah, I mean they don't really leave much for here. I mean, we definitely, just from what we've already seen, there's been more for Pacific Rim. We had those documents, the pictures. We had some of those videos. So if there's anything that's going to be potentially more, it's going to be Pacific Rim, because we've already kind of seen them invest a little bit into it. I agree. It looks kind of like this was just a little like, hey, here's a nice little fun way to get people to, you know, find out about the trailer. And especially, like, for me, maybe it doesn't matter, but for me, the fact that they didn't use real Kryptonian symbols kind of bugged.
Yeah, so, yeah, that was kind of weird that those weren't, like, actual.
Yeah, they just kind of made it up, symbols. So whatever, that's fine. but, yeah, I mean, I like the idea of the whole Deep Space Radio Wave project and how maybe you could, you know, maybe they're detecting something, you know, from back when Clark first got here or something like that, you know, or maybe whatever it is that brings these villains here. I mean, you could expand that if you wanted to. I just don't know if they want to bother, especially with something as big as Man of Steel. They may not need to. You know, there's always that talk of, you know, if something's a big enough movie, do you bother with the viral campaign? And we've seen it both ways. I mean, Dark Knight had a very complicated viral campaign. They probably didn't even need it. And then there's been a few examples. I mean, even 2012. I imagine your average person who went to go see 2012 didn't really probably follow the viral campaign for that. But the viral campaign was actually really detailed and actually gave away a lot of the plot. So it's hard to tell whether, just because something's big, whether they're not going to bother with the viral. So since we're talking about Pacific Rim, you know, that trailer came out this week because of the viral campaign. What do you guys think of the trailer? I'll start with Caleb this time.
I'm sorry, what trailer was that?
Pacific Rim.
Pacific Rim. Yes. Oh my god, yes. wow. It blew me away. Like, the scale of this movie. Like, I was watching it on my iPhone. I was driving. Mm-hmm. I know that's bad, but I plugged my phone into my stereo to get, like, surround sound. Nice. And I was watching and listening as I was, well, you know, I watched when I came to a stoplight, but as I was driving, I was like listening and it kept buffering. So I'm like, oh, screw this, I'll wait till I get home. I put it on my computer downstairs on my Mac, I think I have a 17 inch or 15, no, not a 27 inch Mac downstairs. And I was watching and I'm like, this is just not big enough. So I came up here to my parents' television, which is like 55 inches, and it still wasn't big enough. I'm like, you know, this movie is huge. So, I mean, the trailer looks awesome. It's got me really excited. We get, we get a lot of great quotes from Charlie, is it Hun?
Oh, the
The actor. What's his name?
I forget.
Idris Elba.
No.
No,
he was cool too, though. I know who you're talking about, though. I'm drawing a blank as well. Charlie Hunnam.
Hunnam, yeah. We got a great quotes from him. That up, and then of course Idris Elba's "Today We're Canceling the Apocalypse."
Yeah,
and we also hear a familiar video game villain, Gladys from Portal. Like, I didn't want to believe it was her at first, but then a lot of articles were coming out saying that, you know, Guillermo del Toro got Valve's permission. Valve is the company that created the Portal video games, yeah, as well as several others, such like Half-Life and Half-Life 2.
Mm-hmm.
So he was a big fan of them, and they let him use her voice. And apparently she is the AI for one of the Jaegers. And a friend of mine and I, we were talking about, you know, potential sequel to Pacific Rim, and I came up with a great idea about Gladys, you know, being used for the Jaegers' AIs, but then, like, she turns bad like she does in Portal and uses the Jaegers to attack humanity. And he's like, oh my god, that would be so perfect. Then it comes out that she's actually the AI for one of the Jaegers. I'm like, oh my god.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's pretty awesome. It's nice. I can't wait for it. I think it's going to be released in IMAX 3D.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it is.
So yeah, that's going to be
crazy. Great.
It should have been filmed in IMAX. Like, I don't know what goes through these people's minds. Like, You have this huge film.
It's tough.
With such huge scale, and you don't film it in IMAX.
Well, like, it's tough to film in IMAX. Plus, most of the real big scale stuff is CGI. So it's kind of pointless to film it in IMAX. But I think part of it, it's still pretty complicated to film in IMAX. And so some people just don't bother with that. So I don't know.
Excuses.
What do you think of the trailer, Cody?
I was excited about it. Some of my friends were a little bit iffy about it, but I was excited. I don't have as much to say about it as Caleb. I thought the scale of it was huge, like he was saying. Yeah, I don't know. I'm excited for it. That's pretty much it. It's all surface level for me.
No, that's good.
One thing that I'm excited for, and I didn't see him in the trailer, and I was really hoping he'd be in the trailer, is Charlie Day. Isn't it? He's like one of the top billed guys, and I don't know how he would fit into a movie like this, because he's like, if anybody doesn't know, he's from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Right.
He's like a comedian, and he's like hilarious and like really weird, and I don't know how he's going to fit into this. One thing I will say is that I think this is the first time that American Studio has ever done a serious version of like. Not a monster movie, but like a mecha movie. You know what I mean?
Like the manga kind of thing.
Yeah, like giant robots. I mean,
oh okay.
Like mechs. Like they. I don't know if there's ever been a serious, at least American. I know, like you know, in Japan they do like lots of stuff like that. Like
Power Rangers was serious.
Right, and I think I think it's really. I'm really excited that this is. It's kind of, in my opinion, kind of a landmark movie just for doing. That in American studio, it's like a new interpretation of something that's never been done in America before.
I think it was awesome. I'm not as pumped about it as like I know a lot of people have seen it. They're like, oh, this looks so awesome. I'm like, yeah, it looks really cool, but I don't know. Like, I'll definitely see it, but you know, I want to see where it goes. If it's more than just robots for fighting monsters, if there's any depth to it at all. There maybe doesn't have to be. I would enjoy it if it didn't. I'd be fine. But for me to kind of really want to be super excited for it, it's just like, well, I gotta see if there's more story to it than that. But I think no matter what, like a lot of people, I'll go see it anyway, no matter what happens. Yeah. So the other big thing to talk about this week is The Hobbit. So that opened this week, and it's the first of three movies, which are. Prequels, so to speak, for the Lord of the Rings films. In reality, obviously, they're all books originally. But and Peter Jackson once again came back to direct, and it's 3 hours long, and I really liked it. You know, I'm not as huge of a Lord of the Rings fan as a lot of my friends are, but I like Lord of the Rings, and actually, I didn't like it the first time I watched the first one. I watched it and I was like, okay, this is okay, I guess. And then I never watched the other ones. And then finally, beginning of this year, I watched all of them in order, like over the course of a weekend. I was like, okay, I gotta see if these are, you know, worth what everyone's talking about. Especially because I think the trailer had just come out for The Hobbit or something. And so I watched it. I was like, okay, these are actually, you know, these are really solid. These are really good. So I was excited for this one. And, you know, I enjoyed it. I had seen the animated Hobbit from back in, I think it was the 70s when they made that. So it was cool. It was cool to see like some of the comparisons, to see how it's kind of like that. So, but I thought it was really good. It had a good amount of humor. There's a lot more humor than the Lord of the Rings did. But I know that the book was kind of geared towards that as well. So, but it had a really good mix. And I liked all the characters were good. Great scenery once again, and you know, it was cool to be back in that world. I thought. I don't know. What do you guys think? Start with Caleb this time.
I enjoyed The Hobbit. I haven't seen the Lord of the Rings movies. I plan to watch those soon. But this one was pretty interesting. I saw it in 48 frames per second. That gave me kind of a headache. I'm not sure if it was the film or if it was just me being really excited about, you know, the Star Trek preview and then, you know, actually seeing, you know, the 48 frames per second projection.
Right.
I loved it. It was really funny. I was surprised by that. I thought the acting was great. I'm really excited to see, you know, the dragon. I know they teased him a bit in the movie.
Right.
Benedict Cumberbatch is playing the dragon. He's also playing the Necromancer, who I'm not sure we saw him in this.
We saw him, but you saw like that. It was like the shadowy version of him.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll see more of him in the next movie.
Yeah.
It sucks that we have to wait a whole year to see it, even though it's done.
This is how it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with the whole not seeing Smaug was cool. Like I thought they teased it really well. How you didn't really you saw the fire from him early on, and then you see the eye or whatever. So it's like they did a really good job hiding. I guess you know to make the big reveal even better. What did you think of the movie, Cody?
I liked it. It was enjoyable. It definitely didn't feel like 3 hours. I thought that was one of the best paced 3 hour movies I've ever seen. Probably, It felt like a normal length movie, like an hour and a half, 2 hour movie, and it was way longer. And some of the performances are really good. I liked like Martin Freeman, Ian McKellen. I don't know the actor who plays Thorin, but he was really good. I'm trying to go through all the actors. There were so many people in it because there was like a million hobbits and dwarves and elves and everybody. This is also my first exposure to the Lord of the Rings films too.
Oh, wow.
Just like Caleb, like I haven't seen it yet. Actually, I saw the first one in theaters when I was like 8 and I don't remember it at all. So I know that sounds crazy, like blasphemy. But yeah, for an 8-year-old, it's a little long. I read that this movie was best received by the demographic of children and like teenagers and stuff. And it was very, from what I've gathered, it is a lot later than the other ones. But I thought that at times it was a little bit too light.
You got a little silly once in a while.
For what I was expecting.
Yeah.
There was like a moment, like moments that should have been like much more serious. Like there was the orc battle, and there's a part when the king orc comes up and confronts like Gandalf, and he's like, "What are you going to do about it?" And he slices his stomach open.
Yeah.
And he's like, "That'll do it." Oh no, what is this?
It's like
when Wile E. Coyote runs off the edge of the cliff, and then he looks at the camera and holds up the sign and says, like, "Oh no."
Yeah, exactly.
One of the things I really appreciated about this movie, like I think he was the Goblin King. I think that's who he was.
Yeah.
There was a lot of pop out in this movie.
Yeah, in the 3D, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I was really appreciative of that because, like, when I go to see a 3D movie these days, there's like no pop out. I'm like, it's a 3D movie. Stuff is supposed to come out of the screen. And I know they don't want to make this whole make it quote unquote gimmicky.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's what 3D is like. And I watched The Lorax, like there was so much pop out. It just got, you know, really, you know, I was getting bored with it. But you know, a little subtle effects like the sword coming out or the butterfly even.
Yeah.
That was okay, and I really liked that kind of those kind of effects.
Yeah, you got to have some of that, because otherwise, what's the point? Like, why are you spending the extra money if you're not
like Avatar had none of that.
Yeah, I mean, you saw the depth though, so that was probably one of the few examples where I'd be like, well, that's not bad. But in general, yeah, I mean, there's been many times where I've seen a movie in 3D. I'm like, why did I bother seeing this in 3D? There's been a lot. So at least this one, I didn't feel that. So that's good. But I agree, there was definitely some silly moments. The book, and I haven't read the book, but apparently, the book is kind of a little bit more geared towards children. Than the Lord of the Rings were.
I don't understand how that can be. Like,
yeah, I don't know.
There's so much scary stuff.
But if you watch our cartoon, then you can kind of see it, because the cartoon is very much family friendly, and I like it. It's much more of a musical. Some of the times where they sing in the Hobbit is stuff from the actual. They did it in the cartoon, like when they're bouncing around the plates and stuff in the beginning, you know, so that kind of stuff is all in there. So it's definitely a lot more kind of, it's still a little darker, but it's still very family friendly in that version. So, it was cool to see them take it a little bit, you know, expand on that, but then still kind of keep some of the lightness. But I definitely can see where people might go, well, okay, some of this stuff was a little bit much, you know. Yeah, I agree that whole goblin killing, I don't know if that's a spoiler for people, but that whole Goblin King scene was just that line he had, I was like, really? Okay, so
his guts fall out, that was
yeah, but no, I really liked it to see, for me, going back into the world, even as someone who's not a huge Lord of the Rings fan, I mean, like I said, I really liked them once I rewatched them, but that's one of the fun things about watching the extended editions, where they're like 3.5 hours long, is you get to really like and Peter Jackson, I think, is really great at this. Just kind of creating this environment, and it feels so real. Like, you know, this is a fictional like place, and yet it feels so real. And he does a really good job of doing that. And so, kind of going back into that world is a lot of fun, and it makes me want to like move to New Zealand because you know, a lot of the scenery, you know, is all shot in New Zealand, and some of the sceneries are have to see which ones are real and which ones are fake. Obviously, some are very obviously fake, but there's some where I'm just like, dang, that's nice. So, yeah, for me, I really like that part of it. And seeing all the different characters come back and actors playing them come back, so that was fun. You know, Gandalf, and you got to see Frodo for a little bit. So I thought it was a lot of, and I'm very interested to see where it goes. I felt that a good chunk of what was in the animated film was already in this. So I know there's more to be told, but that's something that kind of surprised me. Man, they did a lot of the story already. But I'm sure there's a lot more to tell. So it'll be fun to see where they go with it.
Yeah. Dan, did you see it in 48?
No, I didn't. I think it was only one of us that didn't. So right. I sound glad, because I know that there's a lot of concern about it. Because yeah. It, the higher frame rate, 48 versus the normal 24, some people... Mm-hmm. Say that it kind of makes it look a little video gamey, or it looks a little sped up, because it kind of is, but and not really. Yeah. So like some people said, it makes certain things look bad, but makes certain things look really good. I'm not sure if you guys had that same experience.
Yeah, you go first. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, in the beginning, it doesn't look good. Like everything's slowed down. He's like rummaging through this chest, and it just looks weird. But then once you go on the adventure, that's when it like. Really looks great.
Okay. What do you think?
I thought that same scene when he was rummaging, might have just been me, but like, I mean, obviously it was just me. The 48 frames, since I wasn't used to it, it looked like the film was like being projected too fast, or like when they filmed it, they quote unquote like undercranked it. So when they played it forward, it looked like it was sped up. Hmm. Like it looked weird. It looked like, you know how in like some older movies they did stuff slower and then they sped it up for safety purposes and it looks like not
terrible.
Totally good.
It looks terrible.
It looked like that to me. It looked like that to me. Eventually I got used to it, but like all those flying shots with landscapes, they were really beautiful in 48, but they were so vivid that they almost like I'm saying to myself in every single one of those shots, wow, this is so vivid. And it like takes me out of the movie because I'm like going back into my mind saying, oh, I'm in 48 again. Yeah. It like reminds me that I'm in 48 because it's so vivid, and it's like looking at a beautiful picture as opposed to, I don't know. It was distracting for me. I don't know.
What do you guys think that this is kind of where the future is going to be?
I hope they don't make everything like that.
No, it's like there's this film review. I'm not sure if you heard of him, Kevin McCarthy.
Sounds familiar.
He's so for 48. He's like, it's the future of film. Like, you can't do everything in 48 frames per second, just like you can't do everything in 3D or IMAX. Like it just doesn't work. Like, I'm not going to go watch a Meryl Streep movie in 48 frames per second.
Oh my God.
Well, what's interesting is that, you know, there's the question of whether this is like 3D and IMAX where it's only for certain things, or if it's something that's more like, you know, this is where the future is going to be, like digital versus film. So I know one of the things I read was about the idea that if everything becomes 48, because I think there's some people are saying like, well, the newer generations of people who aren't used to films, they're used to watching, you know, computers and stuff, which computers actually have a 60 frame per second refresh rate, but when you watch movies, it doesn't really impact it. But the point is that, you know, people actually can really kind of appreciate faster frame rates, especially if they're not familiar with the film history and stuff. So if that becomes standard, though, then it would be really hard for people to go back and watch 24 frames per second. I thought that was kind of an interesting idea. That if 48 becomes the standard, let's say in, you know, 30, 40 years, and everyone is watching that, then it's going to be really difficult for people to watch 24 frames per second because it's going to look weird to them. So it's going to have like the opposite effect. I thought that was kind of interesting. Because then you almost like negate film history because people won't be able to appreciate these films.
Maybe it's a thing like 3D. This is like the first time this has ever been done.
Right.
So the technology has to be perfected, I guess.
And I've heard something about that too. That they've got to be really good at making it work. Just like 3D, you know, when you see first 3D movies, they're terrible, and you know it's taken a while for people to really kind of understand how to use 3D really well. And so I think probably something like that, where with the 48 frames per second, there's a lot of things. There's cultural stuff that needs to be done, but also I think a lot of technology and knowing how to film something in 48, because I think I heard something about lighting too, is changes and stuff. So
yeah,
the idea is like you really got to understand how to film something in 48, because otherwise it's you're gonna have the issues that people have been talking about. Yeah. So any other stories this week that got you guys buzzing?
Not really, no.
I just saw the numbers for The Hobbit. It made about $85 million this weekend, which is the record for a December. So, which is nice. It's got that going for it, which is nice. go ahead.
Oh, I was just thinking, I was just going through my mind of news that I read this week about films. There was some news about Tron. They announced that the director would come back if the script was good enough, and they announced that Garrett Hedlund would come back.
Right. Yeah, I think Kaczynski actually said something about how the Tron 3 would be like his Empire Strikes Back. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, he did.
I was like, let's relax.
He would only come back if the script was analogous to that. Like, it was that good. But he's making it sound like it's getting there.
Yeah.
That's what he said.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Have you guys watched the cartoon at all? That's on Disney.
Tron
XP.
Evolution.
Uprising. Yeah,
but I kind of lost track of it, and I haven't picked back up.
Yeah. I watch it when I get a chance. I haven't watched the last three or four episodes, but I try to keep up with it. It's cool. Really confusing a little bit about the timeline of this all. I know it happens between Legacy and Tron,
right?
But there's all these different things that they've released that take place between Legacy and Tron at different points, and it's hard to keep those intact. And we have Tron, we have Tron Legacy, we have Tron Uprising, which is the cartoon. Mm-hmm. They had Tron Betrayal, which was the comic book.
Mm-hmm.
They had Tron Evolution, which is the video game. Each one of those is a different part of this timeline, and those middle three, Betrayal, Uprising, and Evolution, all take place, and I don't know what the order of those are at all. It's really confusing. Oh, and then there's Flynn Lives too, if you want to count that as another part of the timeline.
Yeah, the whole Flynn Lives thing. Yeah. It's a lot of content. So I can see why it definitely gets kind of confusing once you start doing that. So anybody wants to know, I'll probably do a end of the year podcast coming up soon too. We'll see how many people, maybe get a bunch of people on that. I also want to do obviously a preview for next year for the movies. So, people listening can expect those. Maybe I'll do a spy film one, since I've been watching all these Bond films, a podcast just on spy films. we'll see. So yeah, that'll be it then. Thanks guys for coming on. It was good talking to you.
Yeah, you too.
Thanks for having us.
Yep. And see you guys later.